On this episode of the Wrestling Brethren podcast, we discuss wrestling news tidbits of the week. We discuss a little crown jewel and we cap things off with a wrestling Q&A. AOJ Will, get us started.
What up? This is Josiah Williams and you're listening to the Wrestling Brethren podcast, where wrestling and pop culture collide. Yeah.
To the Wrestling Brethren podcast. I'm your host, Josh Wiener. This is episode 259. With me tonight is Jarrett Aubrey. Jarrett, how the hell are you?
Not too bad, Josh. And I did something today that I didn't think I was going to do, and that was watch Crown Jewel live. Can you believe that?
I cannot. And I actually paid more attention to it than I thought I would, and I wasn't even watching. But we'll get to that in a few minutes. But first, some wrestling news of the week. And I want to start with a correcting myself for some misinformation from episode 257, where we talked about Tony Khan being interviewed and his ballsy attitude, so to speak, about having more money than Vince McMahon. But I misspoke. I said he was interviewed by the New York Post. That was not correct, because I actually listened to the podcast where he was interviewed. It was actually Barstool Sports, and the podcast with the name of My Mom's Basement with Robbie Fox, which is a hilarious name, but a great podcast. I like Barstool Sports stuff, and I do apologize for misreading and misrepresenting who conducted the interview. So it was not the New York Post. It was, in fact, Barstool Sports and Robbie Fox.
Can you imagine that, folks? Ethical journalism and broadcasting. Take that, Fox.
Well, speaking of said competition and head-to-head and war, that did take place last Friday. And what happened, Jarrett? What would you guess happened? I know you know, but what would you think possibly could have happened?
Well, if I knew nothing and somebody came along and said, hey, something, you know, big happened in the head-to-head between WWE and AEW last week, I would have guessed that maybe AEW did better than we all thought they were going to do.
Well, here's the thing. Overall, SmackDown did better than AEW and outdrew AEW. But there's some variables that you have to consider. One, they started earlier. Two, they have a more established audience. Three, if you want to argue that the only reason that AEW won in certain categories of the ratings was because SmackDown wasn't on Fox. It was on Fox Sports 1 because of MLB playoffs. And if it was on Fox, they would have got crushed and blah, 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 blah. Well, whatever. The point is, they were on Fox Sports 1. They did decide to, as Tony put it himself, aggressively extend their show into the space occupied by Rampage. So, yeah, they went commercial free for the last 30 minutes. Tony, you know, said today, earlier on his interview, or not today, yesterday, on his interview on Busted Open Radio, that he was not able to get TNT to do, commercial free 30 minutes because on short notice. But what he was able to do is get the CM Punk Matt Sydal match commercial free. And that was what opened Rampage against the 30 minute overrun of SmackDown. So let's just go over some of those numbers. Friday's WWE Supersize SmackDown on FS1 drew 866,000 viewers with a 0.24 rating in the 18 to 49 demographic. Now, that's the demographic that's used to rate these shows and what investors and other people, the TV executives, the networks, they're all looking at this very important demographic. So the show drew 314,000 18 to 49 viewers. Rampage on Friday drew 578,000 viewers with a 0.24 rating in the 18 to 49 demo, drawing in 313,000 18 to 49 viewers. So only 1,000 viewers separated the two. It was almost a virtual tie in that demographic. But Rampage did defeat SmackDown in the head-to-head 30-minute overlap in the 18 to 49 key demographic. They ran commercial-free on SmackDown, and AEW was only able to get the lead-off match commercial-free. But they did win because they drew 328,000 viewers to WWE's 285,000 viewers in the 18 to 49 key demographic during those 30 minutes. So that is impressive. That's basically where they ran head to head. It was basically CM Punk versus Matt Sydal going up against Becky Lynch versus Sasha Banks.
Well, and given that CM Punk just returned, I wonder who people are more interested in seeing.
Well, not only that, but I think WWE shot themselves in the foot by saying, oh, so-and-so is going to be on Raw and so-and-so is going to be on SmackDown, but none of this counts until the day after Crown Jewel. So
yeah,
it's almost like you're putting on exhibition matches for things that don't really matter, or at least that's how they marketed it. That's how they pushed it and publicized it. I think they did this themselves a disservice. This is the first year that they've ever done that, where we've reshaped and shaken up the rosters, but you have to wait 3 weeks for it to take effect.
Well, yeah, there's a lot going on there, right? So you've got the roster push, like you said, that isn't going to really happen until tomorrow. In the meantime, you're trying to build to an event, Crown Jewel, that's in the middle of the cycle, that is traditionally politically charged, and I can know it, you know, yourself and when Norco was around, like, he would absolutely refuse to have anything to do with shows in Saudi Arabia. You know, there's people that will refuse to watch because reasons. Now you kind of lose that storyline building, right? So if they're taking this time away from the regular cycle to build the Crown Jewel and make it, because essentially Crown Jewel is like Saudi Arabia's WrestleMania, right? Like, it's a huge epic thing over there. And while maybe we don't care about it so much because it's a special show in the middle of the cycle and it kind of disrupts other things, and you know, they have to try and tie storylines together and all that, this is a super big deal over in Saudi Arabia. Like, it's crazy over there for this show. So there's reasons why, you know, perhaps North American fans aren't as interested in it. Combine that with the roster delay, and you get exactly what you said. It's like, well, it just kind of seems like we're just kind of killing time until tomorrow as we record this, right after Crown Jewel, when SmackDown hits and we start kind of the new season with the new rosters and all that kind of stuff. So I think you got a good point there.
And meanwhile, AEW is putting on compelling television with lots of storytelling week after week after week. And even when they have obstacles in their broadcast path, they do a lot of push and build and marketing and driving you to the product, even if it's on a different night. So, for example, SmackDown had to move to FS1 because of the playoffs, but they didn't really do a whole lot to tell you about that, of where to go find SmackDown. Whereas AEW has been pushed to Saturday nights the last 2 weeks, this week and last week, because of hockey on TNT. But they've done everything in their power to tell you it's on Saturday nights. It's on the same channel, but it's on a different night than you're accustomed to. They've done social media posts. They've done radio interviews or podcast interviews. They've made things feel special. Obviously, they're going to tell you during Rampage on Friday where you can see Dynamite on Saturday, or remind you that there is a Dynamite on Saturday. They've done pre-shows. They've done countdown shows. This Saturday, they're integrating college football, because that's what most men watch on a Saturday afternoon. They're doing a countdown show to Dynamite, but it's going to have a college football theme and feel to it to try to bring in the people who just finished watching college football for the day to, hey, say, hey, you just had a great day of college football. Now let's have a great night of wrestling. They're doing everything they can to get you to watch. And I just don't feel that from the WWE. It's like, SmackDown's on Friday. And then they don't tell you what channel it's on. It's like, if you find it, you find it. If you don't, you don't.
Yep. Yep. And even though, as we've said many times on this show, that, you know, we pretty much all feel that SmackDown is the better show at this point, there are still significant chunks that I will fast forward through. So I could have conceivably missed it. I didn't know SmackDown was moving to FS1 until you told me on this very show last week. Right. So if we weren't doing this, I wouldn't have had any clue. Thankfully, I'm a Canadian and I don't have to worry about that. I get it on Sportsnet up here. And it didn't affect me, but if I would have been a regular viewer, I wouldn't have had a single clue. And then you also get things like, oh, I don't know, Bryan Danielson versus Minoru Suzuki.
Yes. AEW, if nothing else, will always give you all kinds of awesome dream matches.
Amazing. Just so good.
And just a quick sidebar on dream matches. Now, this is a dream match that most people didn't even know they needed or wanted, but they're getting it anyway. This Saturday on Dynamite in the AEW World Title Eliminator Tournament, we're getting Bryan Danielson versus Dustin Rhodes. So for you WWE hardcores, you're getting Daniel Bryan versus Goldust. They've never crossed paths in WWE, which seems highly improbable. There should have been like a tag team match somewhere, like Daniel Bryan and Kane versus Goldust and whomever, but never touched in the ring. And now they're going to face each other where Bryan Danielson is one of the best in the world and Dustin Rhodes is still kicking all kinds of ass at age 50.
Well, hell, if Sting can do it at, what, 63? 62, 63? Yeah. Dustin's still letting her rip. It's pretty cool.
Right. It's the dream match. You never know you want it until you're going to get it. All right. Well, before we get into Crown Jewel, just one thing I wanted to touch on briefly. Kind of two things, but it's involving the same duo. So this week, Impact Wrestling had their weekly Press Pass Facebook Live event where Gail Kim hosts a guest of Impact Wrestling and they take questions from the media. And I guess the Wrestling Brethren's invitation got lost in the mail somewhere. That's neither here nor there. So the Inspiration were on this week, Cassie and Jessica, before they even debut, present tense, this Saturday at Bound for Glory. And one of the questions asked was, how did they come up with the name The Inspiration? And Jesse gave all credit to Cassie, saying that she came up with the name after watching the movie Bring It On, which was a long time ago.
Nice.
But there's a line in the movie where they say that they're not cheerleaders, they're inspiration leaders. And so that's where Cassie got the inspiration for The Inspiration.
That's all kinds of awesome. That's reaching way back for that one.
And today, October 21st, they dropped their entrance music complete with a music video. And it is available on YouTube. And if you haven't seen it, I highly recommend going to see it, because if you weren't a fan of The Inspiration before, this music video might just change your mind, especially if you're a male.
Oh, dear.
And I guess Josh, some females, your... too, I guess.
I was going to say, Josh will take your 10,000-word blog post at Josh.
Ah, we're way beyond that. All right. Well,
come on, that's an oldie but a goodie. Yes, we have to dig up every now and then.
Sometimes you got to play the hits, folks.
Yep.
So yeah, I'm totally looking forward to it's going to be rough. Well, no, you know what? It won't be. Dang, I can watch, because of the late start time, I could watch Dynamite and then roll right into Bound for Glory. Holy crap. Saturday night will be busy. And it won't involve WWE at all.
Busy night with your ass glued to the couch.
Right? I need to prep snacks. All right, anyway, moving on. So the topic for... I should say the question for this next topic already has been answered, but we'll address it anyway. Did WWE do anything to fix the issue of the women's titles for Raw and SmackDown, aka Crown Jewel results? So the short answer is no. No, they did not. So that means that Becky Lynch retained, and Charlotte retained against Bianca on Raw, which in a common sense slash logical world, you would have had Bianca defeat Charlotte and you would have had Sasha defeat Becky and Bianca today, because that would have moved the SmackDown women's title back to SmackDown and the Raw women's title back to Raw. But no, we couldn't do that because Vincent Kennedy McMahon runs the show. And God help me if tomorrow on SmackDown, Becky and Charlotte are just backstage and just hand each other, you know, you take your red belt and I'll take my blue belt and bleh. No thanks. So they better have something creative in mind.
I was just going to say, little do you know, Josh, that segment's already been taped.
Yeah, they exchanged it on the plane.
And it's just going to happen on the big screen, too. And it won't even be live.
So irritating. I mean, I guess we should be happy that it's a quote-unquote cliffhanger, but it's not a good one based on history. If it wasn't for the fact that the New Day and the Street Profits did this 2 years ago, we wouldn't have it in the back of our mind. But because they did, I'm terrified that they're going to do the same thing. So, speaking of Crown Jewel, and I know you touched on it earlier, Jarrett, that I generally do not watch this show on principle, and we won't get into all that political mumbo-jumbo, but keeping it within the realm of wrestling, the problem with these shows is usually, today notwithstanding, but usually, they're a glorified house show. They don't keep with the storylines, and it's not really in canon a lot of the time. And usually it's just a giant waste of time, because in the past, it's either butt up against some other pay-per-view that does count, so to speak, or does follow the storyline, or is, you know, important, so to speak, and not a glorified house show. This year, they don't have that problem of it running into other things, but you sort of were concerned about how they were booking and how they were building things up. But from everything I've heard, read, and gotten firsthand accounts from you, Jarrett, today on this seems like probably one of the better Saudi shows that they've mm-hmm. ever put on. And there were plenty of bangers on this show, and they have said, even I heard somebody say that even if you don't bring yourself to watch these Saudi shows, you should go out of your way to watch the Hell in the Cell match, the Triple Threat match. A lot of these matches were good, if not great, just based on the performances alone. And even some of the storytelling. So A, what got into the water that made this more than a glorified house show? I guess everybody had their working boots on, as we like to say here. And this just was weird because it, from all accounts, was a good show.
Yeah, well, like I said, like for Saudi Arabia, this is WrestleMania, right? And I'm sure, you know, much like when we get a tribute to the troops, like the workers are like, geez, this is a special show and we need to deliver. And right from, you know, the kickoff show, the Usos and the Street Profits, to the opening match, which was the Hell in a Cell match from Edge and Seth Rollins. And in that match in particular was excellent. And it didn't even really feel like it needed to happen in it inside the cell, but they made a few good spots. I mean, I'm not even going to rip on the fact that it wasn't, oh my God, this is a pull off to a feud, and they didn't get super nasty, but it's some really cool things, like, you know, set up a table against the wall of the cell, you know, normally a table on its legs. And I think this happened twice where Edge just hurled Seth Rollins out of the ring. He hits the cell wall and then drops and goes through the table, which was a really cool spot. I think he did that twice. This was the rubber match. This is, they did a good job of bringing the fact, and this is a 7-year-old story. They did all kinds of things, like Seth Rollins was using, you know, he tried to do a concerto. He landed a couple on Prettier's. Edge in turn ends up using a stomp. They were stealing each other's moves. There was all kinds of storytelling happening in this match, and it was outstanding. It was really fun. Edge, of course, gets the Duke to blow this one off, hopefully. And that's the kind of stuff they're getting at this Saudi Arabia show, right? At Crown Jewels. Like, they're getting the blow off to Edge and Seth Rollins. They're getting both the female and the male King of the Ring matches to end up in Saudi Arabia. They got a banger of a WWE title match the male King in the Ring match. Xavier Woods and Finn Balor was an outstanding match. And then Goldberg squashes the crap out of Bobby Lashley. I did not see that coming. I thought it was actually going to be a bit of a war. But it wasn't even like a typical Goldberg squash either. This took a while. And he just beat Lashley senseless for 10 minutes. It was kind of fun, actually. The women's match, title match, was really good. And then you get to Brock and Roman, which had the other storyline, big storyline going in it, is whose side is Paul Heyman on? And, you know, all through this build, he's been proclaiming his undying loyalty to his tribal chief as his wise man. But Brock has been laying hints, well, you know, why didn't you tell Roman I was at SummerSlam? You know, I reviewed your contract already for Crown Jewel. I did it with my advocate, Paul Heyman. So Brock's been intimating that Paul's been on Brock's side. And there was the one thing they did. So after all the back and forth, Brock had hit an F5. Brock goes for the second F5. And as he spins Roman around to drop him, Roman's legs take out the ref. Ref bump. Brock goes to pin Roman. It's a 10 count. The ref's out. Nothing happens. Here comes the Usos. They super kick Brock, attack him. They double super kick him. He's kind of out. Roman lands a shot. And as they're lying there afterwards, Paul Heyman throws the title into the ring. And it's dead perfect between a prone Brock Lesnar and a prone Roman Reigns. It's like it's dead center. He chucked it right in between them and says, you know what to do. And you don't know whether he was talking to Brock and you don't know whether he was talking to Roman. And they end up having a bit of a tug of war over the belt. And that's when the Usos got involved and Roman ends up hitting a title shot to the head for the victory. It wasn't even like a spear finish or a Superman punch finish. It was just a title shot. So we still have the question now. Well, Paul Heyman left with Roman Reigns, but who did he mean to throw the title to? So we still have the peeling back of the layers on the onions and just more getting unfurled as part of the storyline goes on. So does this mean that we're going to get Brock and Roman again, or is this kind of a one-off? And then maybe it's a seed for down the line, perhaps, and it comes up again later. I suspect that on SmackDown tomorrow, there'll be the question, and Paul Heyman will do the same thing he's been doing for weeks. Like, well, my tribal chief, I've been with your family for 40 years. I'm firmly on your side, all that stuff. But is he really working with Brock in the background? That's the stuff that we're getting fed here. And it's just getting deeper and deeper as we go show by show. So this Bloodline storyline is continuing to be fantastic. That is big time pay-per-view level stuff. And we got it at the Saudi Arabia show. So there's some big stuff happened at the show. And while you think it would normally have been a glorified house show, this was indeed a pay-per-view level show.
Well, that is, I guess, promising. I'm glad it wasn't a waste of time. I'm glad it didn't waste your time.
Thank my place of work for allowing me a lighter work day where I could pay attention to the shows that was happening.
The one thing I will say, in, you know, all politics aside, whatever you think or feel, fine, but they have made improvements in terms of allowing women to be featured on this show. Granted, they still have to dress conservatively, and all the women had t-shirts on over there. Even if they had, like, you know, neck to torso gear on and nothing showing, they all still wore t-shirts over that. But the last time they were in Saudi was, or the last couple of times maybe, they only had one women's match, and it was a one-on-one match. So they only brought two women with them, period. This show, you had five in matches and a female referee. So I'll give them that for improving in that regard.
And they actually had six, if you count Natalia and Titus doing their kick butt cancer inspirational speech as well.
Correct. So, yes. Six in ring, seven in ring, because the referee is obviously in the ring. Five wrestling, yeah. Two matches. One thing, speaking of the matches, I'm going to have one little nitpick, and this is not based on where it was. It has nothing to do with the location. It has everything to do with believability. And that was the, I don't even know what you call it. It's called the Code Red, but the move itself, what is it? A somersault powerbomb? It's not really a Canadian destroyer, but whatever, yeah. Zelina Vega did to Doudrop, somebody of her size should not be able to do that to somebody of Doudrop's size and get a win out of it, let alone have it physically happen in the first place. So they lost me a little bit on that. I wasn't watching, but I saw the clip on Twitter. So yeah, I'm just going to leave that there.
Yeah. That's like Bret Hart doing that to Yokozuna pretty much. It's kind of hard to wrap your mind around.
Yeah. I could see if she attempted it and then Doudrop just sat on her, that I'd be okay with that. But yeah, that didn't happen. Okay, so Crown Jewel is over. Everybody's making their way back to the States and SmackDown tomorrow, which they've already announced that Brock Lesnar will be at SmackDown and probably demanding answers. So
yep,
there's your cliffhanger right there. All right, so I thought we would wrap up this episode with a little wrestling Q&A. I found this on TikTok, which, you know, has been one of my sources for entertainment since the pandemic started. I downloaded it Nicole and I both downloaded it just to, because Cassie was, my 11-year-old daughter, was interested in having it, and we deemed that it's not appropriate for her, but we decided to continue to use it for our own amusement. So yeah, so I saw this on TikTok. I stripped it down a little bit from a couple of excessive questions, but basically it was a wrestling Q&A, and you know, they asked that you duet this and reply with your own answers and blah, blah, blah. So I just figured I'd use it for our own content and just throw a little swerve into our normal wrestling conversation. So I'm going to ask you these questions, Jarrett Cold. I've already prepared my answers because that's the benefit of being the host. I didn't spend too much time hemming and hawing over it, so they'll sort of be similarly cold answered, but we'll just go through their 10 questions and we'll have a little bit of fun with it.
Sounds good.
Kind of a micro prime cut, if you will, an episode within an episode.
Nice. All Wrestlingception.
Right. Well put. There you go. Coming to a movie theater near you.
Nice.
All right. Who is your all-time favorite wrestler?
Oh, so you're going to hit me with a tough one right off the bat. So my default is to go to Hulk Hogan. He was the man on top when I was a kid. So that's, the first big superstar that, I kind of hooked my wagon to. And then there's The Rock. And I don't know how I choose between them. I simply don't. It's two different eras. It's two different styles. It's completely two different people. Brock was by far a better worker and a better talker. Hogan was just the icon of his time. Yeah, it's like a 1A and 1B, and they constantly flip back and forth. So I'm going to say Dwayne the Hulkster Johnson as my answer.
Nice. Mine is actually a rival of your first answer, your 1A, and my all-time favorite is Randy Macho Man Savage.
Oh,
yeah. Ooh, yeah, dig it.
Nothing wrong with that pick whatsoever.
All right, question two. Who is your favorite tag team of all time?
Another good one. I think back to my first wrestling days, and I just loved Jim Brunzel, and I'm just stalling on his partner's name right now.
Brian Blair.
Yeah, that's the one. I really like them. I think all time though, I gotta go with my boys, the Usos.
Wow, bringing the current relevancy into it.
Yep.
Mine is, I kind of racked my brain on this for a couple of minutes, but I think my answer is based similarly on your answer for a Hulk Hogan. I was too young and didn't really grow up on like the Road Warriors, and I would have said the Dudley Boys, but I didn't see all their ECW stuff because it was hard for me to come by in terms of consumption. So I went with a team who I saw their entire WWF run, basically, and that's Axe and Smash of Demolition.
That's a great choice. Yep.
I mean, they got in there, they destroyed everybody and got out, basically.
Wreck everyone and leave.
Exactly. That's where it really started. No, I'm just kidding. Sorry, Roman.
Yeah.
All right. Question three. Who is your current favorite male wrestler?
Roman Reigns, no doubt about it. I acknowledge my tribal chief.
I went a little established bias, so to speak, and I went to my default answer of CM Punk. Yes,
yep.
Above Roman Reigns, only because, I mean, there's so many promos that you can go to, and just, he was so good and is so good, and you can say that he hasn't missed a beat in terms of promos and he just gets it. He knows what he's doing. He knows who he is. But if you ask me my favorite Punk promo of all time, it may not even be the pipe bomb. I think, because I've seen it again recently and it's more fresh in my mind, I think that your arms are too short to box with God promo against The Rock probably lights up the other pipe bomb promo, because it's so good. And you know, from 2020, I'm losing track of terminology. You know, from hindsight, not 2020 vision. Good Lord. You know, from hindsight, that The Rock has a lot of respect for CM Punk and appreciates his mind for the business. But not only the great line of your arms are too short to box with God, and the only problem I had with that promo is that when Rock retaliated and started mentioning, don't be blasphemous and bring God's, I'm like, oh, crap, he's winning at the Rumble, isn't he? But it was Punk's delivery of, you know, your childish, you know, catchphrases and your kiddie, you know, you're no longer sitting at the kiddie table. You're in the major leagues now. Like, he was saying that Rock wasn't in the upper echelon until he got to CM Punk. Just, it was delivered so well. You know, I could probably do a whole Prime episode on CM Punk by himself. But anyway, I digress. And I will move on to question number 4. Who is your current favorite female wrestler?
This one I might have to think about for a moment. And I'll talk super slow while I'm thinking to try and drag
I'll
it
I'll get
out.
The Jeopardy music in the edit.
You know what? Why don't you give me yours while I'm thinking, and I'll ponder it while you're talking.
Okay. Well, the funny thing is I chose between two role models, and I was going back and forth between Bailey and who my eventual choice was, and that's Dr. Britt Baker, DMD, because she has, I've never seen somebody benefit from a heel turn more than she has. She was so vanilla and boring as a babyface and just was not connecting with anybody. And ever since her heel turn and subsequent knee injury that kept her out of the ring but allowed her to work on her character while still being relevant on television, and she improved in the ring, and she had a story arc towards the world title that made sense, and she won the title. Just amazing work from Britt Baker.
Oh yeah, I can't argue with that. And she's definitely right up there. I think I'm going to have to go with Eva Marie. No, just kidding.
Wow.
If you would have, no, not at all. She's near the very, very bottom of my list. If you would have asked me 2 years ago, I would have had a hard time deciding between Becky Lynch and Rhea Ripley. And now I'm having a hard time deciding between Rhea Ripley and Britt Baker. And I think just because of the fact that, unfortunately, Rhea Ripley has been booked so poorly, it's almost hard to get behind her these days, because it's like, you just know she can do somewhere, and she's just locked up in this horrible tag team with Nikki Cross, who I refuse to say her real wrestling name. You just want her to do more, and you're just sad that she's not doing more. So I think I'll agree with you. I'm going to go with Britt Baker as well for all those reasons.
And the funny thing is, I was going to pick Rhea Ripley, even though she's horribly booked, because she is my favorite. Like, she, like, yeah. I've been supporting her for 2 years, as you've said. It's hard. It's not that her bad booking has made me like her less. It's just, I'm so disappointed in the booking. Like, how dare you treat her this way? So,
yeah. You put that much more eloquently than I did. Cause like, remember when, like, I've been right along with you there at the fandom of Rhea Ripley, and when Survivor Series came along, it's like, this is her star making moment. This is it. She's going to be huge. Like, awesome. Like, let's go. And then kind of crickets. She had that little cup of coffee, and then, you know, it's been all downhill. And unfortunately, it's a bit of a, like, nothing against her. Like, I've still got her right up there, but unfortunately that booking is just kind of I'm like, it made me disappointed.
And it's not even, and not to run off the rails here, but it's not like there weren't opportunities for them to do the right thing. They had things in place. They just went the wrong direction.
Yeah.
But I digress yet again. And let me move on to question 5. Who is the one wrestler you despised as a kid?
That I despised as a kid? Oh my God. That of Jesus. I would probably have to say when Sergeant Slaughter turned and started supporting Iraq against Hogan, that was pretty nuts. And I'm trying to think if there's anybody else. Maybe Macho Man when the Mega Powers broke up, but I think Slaughter might be ahead of that.
Well, I think my choice is because I was definitely a kid every Saturday morning when I saw him make people do things for money and then took it away from him at the last minute. And my choice is Ted DiBiase, the $1 Million nice. Man. I always wanted to see him get punched in the face.
I'll give you $100. You come right down here and lick my shoes. And then they get down there. It's like, no, you're not going to get it.
Next question. What is your favorite WrestleMania match of all time?
Come on, Josh. Ah, so many. What, 30? Wow, how many 30 what WrestleManias now?
37.
Lots of huge, huge moments at WrestleMania. You know, Warrior Hogan, you know, Hogan slamming Andre.
Come on, there's only minimum 370 matches to think back to in your mind. No, I'm just kidding.
I know, and we're getting put on the spot, right? So, I mean, you know, Rollins cashing in and on Reigns and Lesnar was a massive moment. But I think for pure nostalgia, not necessarily nostalgia, yeah, nostalgia, and because it's my 1A and my 1B, I'm actually going to go with Hogan versus Rock from WrestleMania in Toronto. X8? X7, X8, I can't remember which one X8, it was.
X8, yeah. X7 was Texas.
Right.
And I'm sorry, where was that WrestleMania again?
It was in Toronto.
That was before the heel turn, but yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Just the vibe in that match and just, you know, the crowd and then, you know, the way they switched roles in that match. Like I said, it wasn't the greatest work match of all time. I could name a bunch more that were better matches, but just the feel of that match was just fun and awesome.
I'm going to go with a classic, and I'm going to say Randy Savage, Ricky Steamboat, WrestleMania 3.
Oh, yes, so good. Oh, my God. Yeah.
That was kicking out of regular moves instead of finishers, but how many near falls in that match? Not to mention the fact that as adults, we learned that they had written every single step to this match. And it consisted of like over 125 steps. And Ricky Steamboat would tell you that Randy wrote them all down on a legal pad. Step one, we're going to lock up. Step two, we're going to do this. Step three, you're going to do this to me. I'm like, holy crap.
Yeah. And that match involved hours of painstaking rehearsals at, I think it was Macho Man's house they did it at. And they spent weeks leading up to the match, just going over every single step of that match to make sure it was great. And yeah, it was outstanding.
Not to mention the storyline leading up to it with Randy crushing Ricky's throat with the ring bell and George Animal Steel and Miss Elizabeth and such good stuff. Long-term storytelling. Who knew?
No kidding.
All right. Next question. This might be another tough one. Who is the best wrestler in the world today?
Damn you, Josh. There are a lot of outstanding wrestlers. I'm going to go to
Eva Marie again.
I was actually thinking Doudrop, but no. I'm going to go over to AEW because AEW is a place where they're just letting people be who they need to be and getting creative and all this. But I've become a fan again of someone we talked about a little bit earlier, and is Bryan Danielson ever been any better than he is right now?
No, and so much so that is my answer also, mainly because I don't have a lot of access to New Japan and people who might be better. I hear so much about Will Ospreay, but I have never seen a Will Ospreay match, so I can't really. honestly comment about that, and I'd be lying if I just said, oh, Will Ospreay, because all the cool kids say it. So, yeah, of people who I know who can go, and it rhymed. Yeah, Bryan Danielson, hands down.
Yeah, I think I've commented to you a number of times lately, you know, this American Dragon version of Daniel Bryan, which I've never seen before. I never watched him in Ring of Honor. Like, this is awesome. And he's only been around for a few weeks, and he's had just incredible matches. And they weren't even really, I mean, the one against Suzuki was actually a complete match, but even his first match was just just through the bell Donnybrook, right? And there was no resolution of that match, and it was still amazing. So I'd like to see that one. That was against Omega. That one wrap up, and actually have a give him an hour, do whatever you need to do, let him go. I'm like, and Omega's right up there too, but I just think that, you know, with that new attitude and just letting us see all of the ability in AEW versus the WWE quote style of wrestling. Yeah, there's nobody better than Bryan Danielson right now.
Question 8. Name a pro wrestler you weren't a fan of at first, but over the years they grew on you and now you're a fan of.
Bryan Danielson?
Really?
Yeah. I always knew he could wrestle, and I liked a lot of his matches, but I liked them as the eco champion. I liked that attitude. I wasn't necessarily a fan of all of his matches at that point. And there's matches I've liked, but I never liked, the Yes character and the time with Kane. Like, I never really got behind that. And so, like, the last little bit here has just, I'm an instant fan of his now. It's incredible.
One thing I'm glad that someone like Bryan Danielson, and to a different degree, but Malachi Black, brought from WWE into AEW were things that already existed in the wrestling world. And just because they changed brands, they didn't stop doing these things. Like, for Bryan Danielson, when he turned heel against AJ Styles and won the WWE title that became the eco-friendly title, he changed his attitude, not only being a heel, but also in the ring. And he picked up that move where he grabs you by both arms and just stomps the hell out of your head. Well, yeah. He does that in AEW now too, which I think, yep. And he's not a heel. So I think that's good that he brought that with him. Malachi Black obviously took the eye injury, and he's continuing to sell it in AEW, and now it's like a festering virus that's taking over his body or whatever. And he has plans. I've heard him in an interview. He has plans for that. Like, it's going to get progressively worse, and it's almost like a symbiote in the Venom and Spider-Man storyline. So good. Anyway, mine is, I'm going to tweak the question a little bit to match my answer. And yes, that's cheating, but it's my lists that I aped from somebody else, so I do what I want. I'm going to change it to, not that I'm a fan of now, but at least now I can respect them. And that's Randy Orton. I wasn't a fan of his at all. Neither nope. were you, but he's been in this. Yeah. He's been in this so long, and he knows how the game is played, so to speak. And he just gets it. And what he gets more than anything else is how much better he is as a heel than he is as a babyface. And his feud last year with Edge, even prior, more especially prior to the pandemic starting, but even they carried it through, that was some of his best work ever. And he was one of the MVPs of the pandemic era, because he was so strong in his delivery and promos and believability and confidence in his ability. It was just, you couldn't help but respect the man's work. It was so good.
Well, even I like those promos. I just still couldn't get over the fact that it was Randy Orton. I think I just will always have a have a dislike on for that man.
All right, question 9. What is your all-time favorite championship belt design?
Oh, boy. It's either going to be the first wing, like the winged eagle, or it's going to be the AEW title. I think I got to go with the winged eagle. It's such an iconic belt. It's so classic. It's awesome. It's just a really tremendous belt design.
Yeah. And again, we have the same answer on this one. And I still maintain that it could be a popular design today. And if you're worried about it being too small, all you have to do is scale it up. Like bigger plates, a bigger main plate, I should say. And I guess bigger side plates too. But they tried to scale it up with the, I guess, Attitude Era version of it, or whatever that belt is called, the Big Eagle belt, or whatever it's called, as that rounder version of it, that Stone Cold had and whatever. That's not scaling it up. I'm talking about literally making the plate bigger and keeping everything else intact. And that would be an amazing belt. Like, if you made that the size of the AEW belt, could you imagine how grandiose that would look?
Yeah. Yeah, no, yeah, I'm going to go out and buy one of those now, please.
Right? Okay, question 10, and it may be the hardest question of them all, or not, I guess, if you have a formulated opinion. Who do you have as your wrestling GOAT, greatest of all time?
People are going to want me to say something like Ric Flair, like Ricky the Dragon Steamboat, like Macho Man. I maybe even Chris Jericho, people might want me to say. You know what? For my money and my likes and what I have fun watching, I am going to go with The Rock. He was always a solid worker. He kept adding new things. Throughout his career, he kept trying to expand his moveset. He was always one, like arguably the best talker in the business. He kept reinventing himself with different versions of his character, and I could watch him all day long. So, yeah, for me, it's The Rock.
I'm going with one of those people that you mentioned that people might expect you to say. I'm choosing one of those people. For me, the greatest of all time, just because of everything this man has accomplished and done and been involved with, and just transcends everything, and a man who constantly keeps himself relevant and still does it better than anybody else. And I'm going with the Painmaker, Le Champion, all the other nicknames you can think of, and a man who I saw debut in WWE in person back in 1999, 22 years ago, Chris Jericho.
I will never argue that pick. And in fact, I think Le Champion might be the greatest wrestling nickname of all time. I love it. That, no, solid call.
If he was a heel, he could totally play up that Demo God thing after the SmackDown Rampage thing. But as a babyface, I don't think he'll touch it.
Yeah. I have one follow-up question for you that I think has to be asked in any top 10 of wrestling favorite questions. So what is your favorite angle or storyline of all time?
Oof. I think there's been so many good intricate ones, and there's been ones that I enjoy. There's one in particular that I enjoyed as a kid, because when it happened, I was 12. But if I had to look at it through adult eyes, like my current perspective, I don't know that it would hold up as a good storyline. But I'm gonna call a tie. I'm gonna use one from 1988 when I was 12, and then I'm also gonna bring in a more intricate, longer one that lasted 2+ years. The one from 1988 was the Mega Powers exploding and everything that happened with the main event and on NBC and Randy Savage's heel turn and shoving Miss Elizabeth to the ground and just so many memorable things from that storyline and angle. Would it hold up now? That's debatable. I'd have to like watch a lot of the segments in chronological order. I don't know. I know the abuse of women obviously would not stand the test of time, but the storyline on the whole, I don't know. I can't say for sure. Currently, or at least in current times, I would say the feud between Johnny Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa, because even though that was NXT back when it was good, that lasted 2+ years. And granted, some of that time was due to injuries for both guys, but I was there live when Ciampa turned on Gargano at NXT TakeOver Chicago 2. All of those matches those guys had were just so killer. And the storyline was amazing. We've had it to where Ciampa was the heel and Gargano was the babyface. We've had Gargano as the heel and Ciampa as the babyface. We've had them reunite as DIY only to break up again. It is so many twists and turns. Mm-hmm. And granted, it didn't necessarily end the way it should have because of Tommaso's neck injury and subsequent surgery. But on the whole, that storyline was so well done.
Yeah, I absolutely have to agree with that. I think all time for me, I have to go back with the first one you mentioned, and it's the formation and explosion of the Mega Powers. That is my all time favorite. It lasted, you know, it was booked over a long time. They're doing much like they're doing with, you know, the Bloodline angle right now. I don't think the Bloodline angle is very good. It's layered. It's awesome. But I don't think it's as big. It's as epic as that angle was. And they gave us a chunk every time they got on TV, whether it was, you know, a look at Elizabeth, Randy didn't like it, or, you know, the push, or, you know, Randy slapping Hogan in the face, the stretcher incident. They just told that story so well. And, you know, even Hogan did a great job. Like, Hogan's not an actor by any stretch of imagination. He's a great talker. He's not an actor. Just watch Thunder in Paradise. I dare you. but even he did a great job.
Don't torture me like that.
yeah, it's that one is stuck in my brain for all time. And I think, you know, Gargano Ciampa was awesome. This Bloodline storyline is great. There's been some really, you know, the Shield and the breakup of the Shield with Rollins turning on him was really good. Like, there's all kinds of stuff we could point to throughout history, but for me, that Mega Powers angle, I think, will always be number one. Like you said, would it stand up today? I don't know, but I'm sure you could modernize it to run it today and a version of it today if you wanted to, and it would be very good. But yeah, that's my all-timer.
I'm not number three in the Mega Powers. I'm number one. You guys got me in the back seat. Yeah. Elizabeth, try and talk some sense into this guy.
And then poof, the belt shot. And then Elizabeth on top of Hogan. I'm going to splatter you on top of him. Yeah, I'm going to splatter you right on him. And then Brutus Beefcake trying to save the day by snatching the title out of his hand. Happened a long ass time ago, and I still remember all that stuff.
So good, so good.
All right. Well, that is going to be our show for this episode. Next time, we might have another Prime Cut thrown in there. Might it be the movies? Might it be the food? Baseball? Even wrestling? Who knows? Might just throw it all into a hat, and whatever comes out of the hat will be what we do. Who knows? But as far as the wrestle goes, we are obviously post Crown Jewel. We will be post another weekend of wrestling. And will we be any closer to finding out what happens with the Raw and the SmackDown women's titles? And if they just swap backstage or even in the ring, I will be leading off the next wrestling episode with a huge rant. So don't make me do it, WWE. Even if you have to merge the titles or do something at one of the big pay-per-views, Survivor Series, Royal Rumble, God help me if you stretch this out to WrestleMania, but surprise me. That's my challenge. Surprise me.
This show ain't big enough for the two of us. Unification match. I'm looking forward to the next piece of the Roman Reigns, Brock Lesnar, Paul Heyman storyline. I want to see what happens there.
Yes, sir. All right. Well, one final note that I will leave you with, only because I was just reminded of it, is Michael Cole today on Crown Jewel said that the unprettier was Edge's move. Nice. You're welcome. Burial, Michael. All right. Well, once again, thank you for listening, downloading, and subscribing. And as always, we will talk to you next time. Thank you for listening to this episode. You can subscribe to the Wrestling Brethren podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Pandora, or wherever you get your podcast fix to hear the latest discussion from the Wrestling Brethren. You can visit us at twbpodcast.com for posts and episodes. Visit the mothership, if you will, at behindthesquaredcircle.com, home of the Behind the Squared Circle podcast network. Let us know your thoughts, questions, and comments at Twitter at TWBPShow, on Facebook at facebook.com/behindthesquaredcircle, and on Instagram at The Wrestling Brethren. You can follow Jarrett on Twitter at JarrettAubrey5150, and you can follow Josh at SouthpawJosh. Thank you again for listening, and we will talk to you again soon with more from The Wrestling Brethren.